Off the ball. Rugby.
Checkers, rock and roll. And for better or worse, the sport likes its entertainment now, and Michael Checker does that very well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Dave Hannigan about his new book about Roy Keane. We need to talk about Roy, the Keenification of Modern Ireland is the name of the book. It's well worth your time if you're seeking out a read at the moment. And Dave is going to join us from around 7:40 this evening to chat through that. From 8:30 then tonight, we're going to be speaking to Antonio Mateus, who's a Venezuelan journalist. And Venezuela has been in a state of sporting celebration over the past couple of days. They beat the United States in the final of the World Baseball Classic. It's the first time they've won this competition. Obviously, one of their major sports, if not the most important sport in Venezuela. Really looking forward to speaking to Antonio on that subject between 8:30 and 9-ish tonight. And then from 9 to 10, as always, the football show is coming your way. Dion Fanning with us in studio for that. Our number is 087 9180 180 if you want to get in touch. And Dion Fanning, as per usual, hops in punctually early for the News Round. How are you, Dion?
Good, Owen. How are you?
All good. Stephen Doyle's on News Round duty. Evening, Steve-o.
Good evening.
And Ben Symes, fresh from Abbottstown earlier, is here. How are you, Ben?
Oh, good on. Thanks very much.
When you were staring into the whites of Hamer Halgrimson's eyes earlier, did you know that this was a freshly minted man with a brand new contract in line with other employees' wage rises in Ireland over the past couple of years?
Staring into the fresh white teeth, I'd probably
oh, yes.
which blind you as soon as you walk into the room. Yeah, he was in good form. He came up to me about half an hour before the press conference and just came over, shook the hand, said, "Hey, how you doing?" I said, "I'm very good. How are you, Hamer?" He was like, "I'm brilliant. Never been better." Who would have thought he's just walking off after signing a brand new contract?
How does it work when you're in the room? Like, from what I'm reading, it's a bombshell that he just delivers in the middle of the press conference.
There was whisperings. I had spoken to him one-on-one before it and maybe a couple of things were dropped. Maybe I've signed a new contract, but for the rest of the people in the room, there's about 40 probably in the room and he just gets teed up, you know. How happy are you with your job at the moment? He says, "Well, I'm so happy that I've signed the new deal." It's a bit of a bombshell for everyone who's watching. I think it's live streamed on YouTube as well, so a bit of a bombshell for everyone else in the room.
Are we going that strong? Are we going bombshell strong, or are we thinking,
I think it was a bombshell to the FAI, because they only put the press release out after he'd kind of revealed the news, and he also revealed the fact that John O'Shea has only verbally agreed to remain on as backroom staff. He said that they haven't had full commitment yet of all the rest of the backroom team, who he is hopeful will stay on. So it's just a little bit messy, maybe. You know, you would think that would all be wrapped up before the official announcement is made. Did Hamer kind of catch the FAI on the hop a little bit with this one? Just kind of put the news out there? I don't know. But you would think that you'd get everybody kind of tied up and ready to go. And even just the way he kind of said he was put under pressure to sign it this week before the match as well. There's just a few little things going on there if you read between the lines, I don't know.
But does that, yeah, so that, you know, one hand you're saying that, like, it kind of caught them by surprise, but he's then saying that he was being put under pressure to do it. Mm. So is there, not that he's, like, that is an interesting, like, turn of phrase to use in this context, that he was put under pressure to do it, because you kind of think, okay, what was the urgency and the insistence from the FAI, and yet at the same time then he's come out and said it and they weren't expecting that.
Mm. Do you have any theories on that, why they want them to do it this week?
Well, I guess they want to get it done before the World Cup is done. I had a conspiracy theory there just when you were saying that he caught them by surprise. Like, maybe he hasn't signed a new contract at all until he just announced it. "Hey, I've signed a new contract." And they're like, "What are we going to do? We better get this guy."
And this is exactly how much I'm earning.
There's the figure. And they go, "God, okay." Obviously, that didn't happen. Just in case. But no, I think it's clearly they want to get it done on the in case of the downside of if you like. There wouldn't be much of a downside if we qualify for the World Cup, but the downside of having a manager who you then have to negotiate a contract with, if we qualified, and everything is going to, like, the timeline is so crazy from now on. So this is like the last couple of months have been the only real breathing space you have.
You might put a bit of meat on the bone here, Steve-O, and bring us the audio, what Hamer's actually said on the subject.
Yeah, so basically the press conference was kind of dwindling toward its end this afternoon. And as Ben says there, he dropped that little nugget of information into the press conference, the Icelander revealing that he signed a new contract to remain in charge of the men's senior team until the end of the Euro 2028 campaign. He was, of course, unveiled by the FAI back in July 2024. And despite a shaky start to the World Cup qualifying campaign, he has guided his team to the playoffs. Hallgrimsson admitted that not all of his backroom staff have committed to new deals, but he is hopeful they will, including assistant John O'Shea, who has only verbally agreed. He also revealed that it was the association that put him under pressure to sign the contract before next week's match in Prague.
I'm happy to be here. I like the project. I said I wanted to do that after the qualifications or after the tournament, but it was a big pressure from the association for me to sign before these playoff matches. And I said again, I don't want to be where I'm not wanted. So I really felt that I was wanted. So we decided to extend the contract until after the Euro. I'm hoping that we will have more or less an unchanged backroom staff. Yeah, he wants to stay on, but he hasn't signed anything. But spoke to him this morning. And I spoke to him before about this, if we would continue. And he'd love to stay on. He loves it at the moment. Obviously, it's a good moment, so it's a good time to do these things. But yeah, I hope we will continue with the same staff. I love working with these people. I'm surrounded with the superior people here. I love to work with them. I learn a lot from him and Paddy. I've said that in the past, from Gumi and Pepe and Damo. They're all kind of experts in their areas that will make me look a little bit better.
So is the sense here that if Ireland were to win these two games, their manager would become hot property and therefore sort of fall between their fingers between now and their World Cup?
I guess this is Irish football has found itself in this position quite a lot where they've, you know, contracts have been extended before key games, and then sometimes you think was it worth doing that, and sometimes you think that was smart. So I guess that's what their thinking there is. And, you know, when he speaks like that, it's a very persuasive, convincing argument he makes in terms of, you know, like the project and the people working. And, you know, one of the things about Hallgrimsson is that kind of lack of ego, that ability he has just to kind of defer to people. But again, that seems like a strength right now where we are. In late October last year, it didn't seem like a strength. Like, it didn't seem like this was a managerial spell that anyone was going to be talking about. Like, you know, I remember saying, you know, the week of the Portugal game, this is going to be quickly forgotten. Like this, you know, Hallgrimsson's time as Ireland manager, it's just going to be something that we'll move on from very quickly, and here we are, and obviously everything changed in those two games in November, but things can change quickly in the other direction as well.
I just wonder as well, like, that I'm thinking more of if the results go badly next week, that's what the FAI are thinking, because if it does go badly next week, and listen, we all hope it doesn't, that Ireland win the match against the Czechs and go on to that final, but if it does go badly and they don't have them tied down to a new deal, we're back to a situation that the FAI were in before Hallgrimsson was appointed, and possibly several months of a search for a new manager. And they're taking a gamble saying, look, even if he loses next week, they're looking at the progress that he has made with the squad and thinking, let's take a gamble with this guy for the next couple of years for the Euros. Let's keep him in place. Because if you kind of zoom out, you know, it was two big wins that he managed to achieve. Like he said himself after the Armenia result, Ireland need a miracle. they actually got a miracle.
Yeah.
And it was Troy Parrott. They were that Troy Parrott goal away from crashing out of these World Cup qualifiers, and that would have put a totally different picture on it. And I just think that they're kind of they feel that if next week goes badly, we don't want to be in a situation where we could be 7, 8, 9 months looking for a replacement. And also, with the budget that they're shopping with, are they really going to get anybody better? So it's better to have him in place. I think, and just from, you know, quick, you know, scan of friends and football fans, whatever, there's a lot of people who will be kind of dubious about giving him the contract before these matches take place. But that there is a feeling out there. Look, I'm not sure if it's a good or a bad idea, but it remains to be seen.
You might give us the details on the squad today, Steve-O.
Yeah, just to say, Sammy Smodic, Salim Brown and Robbie Brady all return for the trip to Prague, while Adam Ida has been past fit. Watford defender James Abankwa, Stoke midfielder Boston Lowell and Luton Town goalkeeper Josh Keighley also included, with the veterans Seamus Coleman and John Egan. QPR midfielder Harvey Vale also included for the first time after his FIFA clearance came through earlier this month. Meanwhile, former Sligo Rovers attacker Owen Elding, he's receiving his Irish citizenship next month and will be eligible for the under-21s international fixtures this summer. Jim Crawford also announced his squad today for the upcoming qualifiers against Moldova and Kazakhstan. First call-ups for Jaden Uma of Benfica, Adam Brennan of Shamrock Rovers, Malaga's Aaron Ochoa Maloney and Sean Patton of Reading.
Let's hear a little bit more from Hamer Halgrimson. Ben, as you mentioned, was out speaking to the Republic of Ireland manager. Here he is, first of all, talking about the leaders in the squad.
Yeah, it's huge, not only for this squad that is fairly young, a lot of young players, even though they've had now probably 20 internationals, so it's really important to have these players that have done this before, just to share their experience. But we're obviously picking them because of their football qualities, not how good they are outside of the pitch. But now for these guys, the majority of the squad, this is probably the biggest game they've played in the Irish shirt, but they have experience, and I need to give thanks to Stephen Kenny to pick these young players and give them their first games, and he should be proud seeing this team doing so well now, and he has a big part in all of this kind of growth which is happening at this stage.
That's an interesting touch there, Ben. You didn't tee him up on his Stephen Kenny response there. That's coming straight from Hamer.
Yeah, I'd love to say that I had the journalistic poise to ask that question. What credit does Stephen Kenny deserve to this? But unfortunately, I didn't. He did it completely off his own back. And it's quite funny when you walk into the FAI HQ out at Abbottstown, St. Patrick's Athletic train, literally it's about 10 metre gap between the FAI HQ and the campus centre where St. Patrick's Athletic train. So Stephen Kenny walks by those doors quite literally every day between Monday and Thursday during the week. It was really nice to see him give Kenny his props and his flowers, because I think during that phase, there was kind of acknowledgement that this was a transition phase. And maybe sometimes people forgot that when results weren't going too well. And like history, people kind of said at the time, history's going to look back very, very kindly upon Stephen Kenny's reign when you see the players that he gave his debuts to. And I actually spoke to Kenny last week. I was out speaking to him ahead of Pats' game against Drogheda, and I was just chatting to him off the cuff about Ireland and how he's looking forward to watching his country in the international break. And, you know, he said it fills him with a sense of pride every time he watches these players go out and play for Ireland, the likes of Troy Parrott, the likes of Adam Ida, that whole real under-21 squad that he gave their first team debuts to. And it's nice to see the current manager acknowledge that yes, we did go through a transition phase. And like we said, maybe Hamer also went through a little bit of a transition phase at the start, but it looks like maybe, hopefully, we're coming out of that transition phase with those players now, like you said, having 20, 30 international games under the belt and ready to kick on.
So Stephen Kenny loosened the jar and Hamer Halgrimson finished off the job, opened it.
Well, no, I think that, like, Stephen Kenny at the time talked about how it was just essential to bring players in, and there had been such a gap and such a, you know, there was such a dearth of young players coming through over a certain period of time, and he did that, and he, you know, for better or for worse, he had a kind of vision of what he wanted Irish football to be, and it clearly, you know, it was like, I agree with Ben, it was transitional to a degree. Clearly, it didn't. It then went kind of sour, and I was, you know, for a long time, I was firmly in the Stephen Kenny camp as somebody who believed that what he was trying to do was important, and still believe that what he did was important. But the necessity, to a degree, not to a degree, the necessity of getting results at a certain point meant you couldn't keep in that sort of transition phase, and I think it needed to have a sign of progress, and that's what that's what has finally happened with Ireland under Hal Grimson. And it is again, it goes back to the point you said about his lack of ego in some ways, that ability just to say, you know, the manager who came before me actually, you know, get some credit for this, or should be proud of what he's done. Like, that is the way he tends to operate.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me a bit. I remember when Ireland won the Grand Slam in 2009, the rugby team, and the first thing Declan Kidney did in his post-match interview was thanked Eddie O'Sullivan for creating the foundations on which that Grand Slam success was built. So again, like for Hamer, Hal Grimson to say that, I think it was a really nice touch. Fair play to him.
As you mentioned there, Harvey Vail, after completing his registration for the Republic of Ireland, has been called up to his first ever squad, set for a debut. Probably more likely to get his debut if Ireland lose the first game, and then they're up against probably Macedonia in the second game. That's likely where he is to play. But we've seen players get their first call up in an international squad, suspect they're going to get no minutes, and then things change within the camp. So let's not count our chickens on that front, first of all. But let's hear from Hamer Hallgrimsson talking about the new boy, Harvey Vail.
I had a talk with him probably over a year ago, and he expressed his desire to play for us. He already had a passport. So I've been watching him since then, and I think this is the correct time to bring him in. And looking forward to working with him. We need to get to know him a little bit better, show him what we are doing, and getting him involved in that one. But obviously don't like many players coming in as new players in such an important moment. But he is a match winner. He is a you know, good attacking player. He's good engine, good height, hard-working player. I see him as a potentially big player for Ireland in the future.
What can you tell us about Harvey Vail?
Harvey Vail was, if you ever read those Guardian articles of like 50 wonder kids playing in the Premier League, Harvey Vail was always number one on those lists, or those lists where you saw who will start for England in the World Cup in 2036. Harvey Vail was always on those lists. So he came through Chelsea's academy, and when I say highly rated, like, he was the top player in Chelsea. I mean, he actually won Chelsea's Academy Player of the Year in 2021. He broke into the first team. He ended up making 7 appearances for Chelsea's first team. He captained England to the Under-19 European Championships.
Played against Shamrock Rovers.
Rovers in the Conference League. Ended up getting a Conference League medal only last season. He moved to Queen's Park Rangers last February, and he was injured when he moved there, so he didn't really get a full look in until this season. And even, it's really only the last couple of weeks where he's truly hit his form. So he can play off the right wing, off the left wing, or in a 10, which is where he was kind of touted to play when he was coming through Chelsea as a youngster. He won Championship Goal of the Month in January with a superb strike against Wrexham. A goal and 2 assists on the weekend in a 3-1 win over Leicester City. As Hamer Grimson said, a really creative player, a player that we probably don't see too many of them in an Ireland shirt. The likes of Finn Azaz that can pick a pass out of nothing and create something out of nothing. I'm really, really excited about this. I'm also quite glad to hear that he says, you know, he was saying he went to Queen's Park Rangers just for a day, and Harvey Vail basically came up to him and said, I have an Irish passport, I want to play. Right. How do I go about doing this? Which is quite nice to hear. It's not
nice someone carries his passport around, isn't it?
Like, but if you know anything about QPR, you know, there's a lot of Irish fans.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people in QPR support Ireland. So maybe he just been down in, you know, and Shepherd's Bush, he just, you know, that Irishness has just kind of, you know, filtered down and percolated into him. So he's done, and he did that game against, they were 1-0 down against Leicester at the weekend, and he turned around. So like, he had those seems to have really settled in there in the last few months.
Am I wrong to suggest it's only going to be a no-mark game against Macedonia where he plays?
I wouldn't be too surprised. There's a couple of players. Boston Lowell is another one who, just by Hamer's comments today, you kind of think maybe these players will have a little bit more of a part to play than we think. Like you said about Harvey Vail, he's a match winner. I didn't want to bring any new faces in, but I just had to bring this guy in. Makes you kind of think, why would he be doing this if he didn't think he could spring him off the bench if the game's hanging in the balance? The same with Boston Noel. He was asked why he'd pick him over Connor Coventry, who's obviously played in that game against Portugal. And he said he's more physical, he's taller, and he can cope with what we expect this game versus Czechia will be about. So I think there may be a few surprises being sprung off the bench in this game.
One last thing from Ben's chat with Hamer we want to bring you is about the man we thought was going to be in the squad, but because Adam Eda has declared himself fit, he's not in the squad. It's Dave McGoldrick. So here's Hamer on McGoldrick.
He was in the frame. We were just looking at all our options. What options do we have? And his name came up when we were discussing, and obviously he's done brilliantly with his career, I would say. A few years back, he decided to stop playing for the national team. So John O'Shea gave him a call and said, what if, would you be ready to come? And he was surprised but delighted to have the call. So it's just we wanted to have a plan A, a plan B, plan C, if something would happen. He was kind of in our thoughts. And that's the reason why we gave him this call. We just wanted to know if would he be ready if we would call him up.
Roller coaster of emotions there for McGoldrick when the phone rings. Are you available? Are you ready? Yes, I am. You're option B, option C. Sorry, David, probably not going to actually get the call up. But again, we don't know what's going to happen in the near future. Are we saying that he's like first reserve if
Little bit further down
is
the list.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think this started kind of as an internet craze. And then people caught Hamer on the hop at Galway last week and, you know, said, well, would you call him up? And he said, if you're good enough, you're good enough. And then it just kind of accelerated. Barnsley announced that their game got called off next weekend due to international call-ups. And people then went, oh, it must be McGoldrick, despite Barnsley have had, I think, four games called off in international windows already, four call-ups. By the sounds of it today, it kind of sounds like, well, Hamer actually kind of outright said he didn't make his provisional squad. So it's going to take some serious injury issues, unfortunately, I think, if we're to see David McGoldrick play for Ireland again.
Barry's been in touch to say, very classy from Hamer to give Kenny his props. At least he didn't go down the Trump route. The results are all me, me, me. John says, remember how hard it was to find and appoint a manager. It would be madness not to keep him and sign him up now in case the team loses next week and the commentariat go into full hype mode. Cool heads prevailing for a change. And Dylan asks, have we learned nothing from giving Mon and Trapp contracts for tournaments/games?
Yeah, well, that's the downside of it. But again, you know, I think ultimately you have to side on the idea of, like, the search for a manager, as Steve-O says. Like, you know, it was such a... You know, we're not, there isn't a manager in the salary bracket that Ireland are going to be paying that is going to transform things out of proportion to the disruption of actually searching for somebody and the lengths we need to go to do that. Now, that's the reality of it, and I think, you know, if you keep a manager there long term, you're also saying we're going to address other areas of Irish football. That again was probably what Stephen Kenny was trying to do, and he had, you know, he was so concerned about, like, the general state of Irish football. Hamer probably isn't as invested in all that stuff, although he'll say the right things about it. But, you know, if you keep a manager in place there, you're not into this total, that's fine, let's get this, there's a saviour out there somewhere, because there isn't really a saviour for Irish football. So you might as well have a kind of, you know, a steady, polite, nice pair of hands.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, in fairness to him, he was at Oriel Park on Monday night. Like, he's been around the grounds in the League of Ireland, which, like, a lot more than any of the other senior managers, you know. And, like, I don't think it's just, you know, him looking to curry favour with League of Ireland fans. I think he genuinely is taking an interest in going to games and stuff. Like, it's like a far cry from O'Neill and...
No, I'm not saying he's not interested, but you know Stephen Kenny was more invested in that than...
Yeah, you know, of course, absolutely, yeah.
But if there is a saviour of Irish football, it's probably the AZ Alkmaar number 9. He is starting tonight, Steve-O?
He sure is. Troy Parrott starting for AZ in the UEFA Conference League. I keep saying the old name. That's in the last 16. The Eredivisie side are up against the Czech outfit Sparta Prague and, of course, have a 2-1 lead against the Czech side going into that second leg. It kicks off at 8 o'clock. Parrott will be up against the Czech international Jaroslav Zeleny. In that
no
game.
Likes that.
Oh, lads, what are we going to do?
I know.
Are we watching this?
6'4", centre half, 33 years of age.
Come here, hang on a second. He wants to play as well next week. Like, surely, is there like an Ireland, Holland, Italian 90 kind of agreement going? Listen, let's just take it on easy on each other here tonight, mate.
Or Troy Power gets out in front of this and does him straight away. Doesn't have to be the striker that falls victim to this.
Oh, Paris, there were a two-footer.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I don't know what I'll be keeping this much of an eye on this. It's
stressful.
It's not the only Irish man involved in European football tonight. Oh, my God. Crystal Palace, like, lads.
What's going on?
Paddy McCarthy, of course, on the coaching staff at Crystal Palace. And they were leading by a goal to nil away to Larnaca. Remember, that tie was 0-0 after the first leg at Selhurst Park. However, Larnaca have scored an equaliser, Sabarit scoring the 63rd minute. And 11 minutes later, the same man got sent off for a second yellow card. So Larnaca down to 10 men. It's 1-1 in the tie with just under 5 minutes to go. So they could be heading for extra time there, Crystal Palace, against a 10-man team from Cyprus. In the Europa League, it's Nottingham Forest 2-1 up away to Midtjylland. That one was 1-0 to the Danish side from the first leg at the City Ground. So that one in Denmark, less than 5 minutes to go, and it's 2-2 on aggregate. Also tonight in the Europa League, Aston Villa welcome Francis Lille to Villa Park, where Unai Emery's side hold a 1-0 advantage ahead of that tie. Just a quick look at the Villa team. Martinez in goal. Back four, Bogard, Lindelof, Torres and Matson. Onana and Douglas Luiz in midfield. Sancho, Rodgers and McGinn behind Tammy Abraham.
Finally then, on the football front, Steve-O, what has FIFA been saying today? The officials were meeting to hold talks about a couple of pressing issues, to say the least.
Yes, indeed. Well, they were due to hold talks regarding the escalating Middle East crisis, with uncertainty still hanging over whether Iran can play at this summer's World Cup. Over a week ago, the Iranian sports minister, Ahmad Danyamali, told Iran state television that the corrupt regime, referring to co-host the United States, assassinated their leader, and under no circumstances can we participate in the World Cup. And not long after that, US President Donald Trump said he didn't believe it was appropriate for Iran to take part for their own life and safety. Now, American and Israeli airstrikes on the country have cast doubt on their participation, and Iran are scheduled to play all three matches in the group in the United States. There are reports to say Iran's Football Federation and its embassy in Mexico are negotiating with FIFA about the possibility of moving their group matches out of the US and into Mexico. So Gianni Infantino spoke after today's meeting of the FIFA Council and said, here's his quote, "FIFA can't solve geopolitical conflicts, but we are committed to using the power of football and the FIFA World Cup to build bridges and promote peace, as our thoughts are with those who are suffering as a consequence of the ongoing wars. FIFA is looking forward to all teams participating at the World Cup to compete in a spirit of fair play and mutual respect. We have a schedule. We will soon have the 48 competing teams confirmed, and we want the FIFA World Cup to go ahead as scheduled." They spoke at the meeting about Palestine and the fact that they'd brought a request to FIFA to have Israel and their team suspended over an alleged offence of discrimination and continued football being played on occupied territories. But the FIFA Council has ruled Israel should not be banned from world football. The Israeli FA has been fined and warned over its future conduct. The FIFA statement says FIFA should take no action, given that in the context of the interpretation of the relevant provisions of the FIFA statutes, the final legal status of the West Bank remains an unresolved and highly complex matter under public international law. FIFA should continue to promote dialogue and offer mediation between the Palestine Football Association and the Israel Football Association at an operational level. In this context, FIFA will continue to facilitate structured engagement and monitor developments.
On Gianni Infantino and his commitment to using the power of football to build bridges and promote peace, I presume that's going to get the job done, Dion?
Well, it's worked so far. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen how the kickstart the Peace Prize gave to another war. Although the war is going so badly for America, they might end up begging Iran to take part in the World Cup. You know, it's whatever they have to kind of negotiate and climb down from this thing that's spiraling out of control, which they don't know how to end. They might say that maybe guaranteeing Iran's place at the World Cup is how we, you know, part of the negotiating strategy. So who knows? But like, Infantino's stuff is, it's just nonsense as usual.
Yeah. 087-918-180 is our WhatsApp number. Kieran says, "Glad to hear Hamer is staying on. Happy with both the Ireland senior and under 21 squads announced today." And Gavin asked the question, Would you prefer Duff and O'Gara as Ireland football slash rugby coaches, or Halgrimson and Farrell? I'll let you guys chew on that one over the break. That is Sophie's choice right there. As I say, you can get in touch with us on WhatsApp. And the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. We've got more in the news round after the break and before the ads. It's the Cash Machine.
The news round on Off the Ball.
Welcome back. We've got Ben Symes, Dion Fanning, and Stephen Doyle here in studio to round off the news round tonight. We're all consummate professionals. We all want to be dressed up as traffic cones right now, heading on down to the Tree Arena to watch the greatest game of them all. It is up and running tonight, Steve-O.
Yes, indeed. The bad news, though, is that Jean Van Veen was forced to withdraw from this evening's games. The 23-year-old was diagnosed with kidney stones and he remains in hospital receiving treatment. It means his opponent, Michael van Gerwen, received a bye into tonight's quarterfinals. He also gets 2 league points, while Van Veen receives a -6 leg difference and will be awarded no points. Darts fans do get to watch, though, Johnny Clayton taking on Luke Humphreys. That match is currently on. No, it's Stephen Bunting against Luke Littler is the match currently in play. Littler leading Bunting by 5-3 in legs. It's the 1-6 that will progress. Humphreys takes on Clayton at 8:20. Before that, though, at 10:10, Antrim's Josh Rock is up against Gerwin Price in his first Premier League game in Dublin. And Rock told Off the Ball's Matthew Brennan how he'd like to see European tour events come to these shores.
But it definitely deserves a European.
Yeah, 100%. If I know this is a bit putting you on the spot a little bit here, but if it was to happen, where do you see kind of a location for it to happen? Because the logistics of it aren't simple, I don't think, in terms of a European Tour event for people who maybe wouldn't be too familiar with it. It goes on over a couple of days, and you have to pick the right venue for it, I think.
I don't know like any venues would be as like big.
It'd be too big, yeah.
But the only one, like I say, you said the Glen Eagles and Killarney because of how big...
Yeah.
That venue is in the hotel. I don't know because I don't know big arenas. You maybe even hold it in the Three Arena again because the Premier League's there. You would get the crowd.
Yeah, bring the darts to Killarney. That's a good message from Josh Rock there. Have you been to the darts, Dion?
I haven't. No.
Why is that?
You're putting this very aggressive line of questioning. Why haven't you been to the darts?
I think it's as valid a question as any in this day and age.
I don't want to go.
Why is that?
It's not my thing. I don't have any huge interest in going to.
A little bit of an interest, though, is not a huge interest.
No, I've no interest.
You've no interest. Has anybody else in the room been to the darts? No,
I've been a couple of times. Yeah, I went to one of the first events out in City West years ago, and. Brought a couple of friends, and I'll be honest with you, it was absolutely chaos. Like, the toilets were just
right.
Wasn't good.
Say no more.
We were brought on a junket down to the Three Arena a few years back, and it was a bit more kind of civilized.
Did you check the toilets out when you got there?
Yeah, they would have had to get a couple of carpenters in the next day, shall we say, to the toilets in City West after that one. It was
carpenters. Carnage.
Yeah, the doors taken off the hinges and everything. It was just carnage.
You're really selling it to Dion here.
My position is really validated.
If you don't get tickets for the playoff final next year, you bring your son and tell you.
My stance here is, I'm glad I went hard and went fast on that. Like, I'm not going, and Steve-O's back, certainly validated it.
Yeah, it is definitely the drunkest place I've ever been. I did cover it once. And but into the fact that I was working at it, I was sober, which is the worst thing you can possibly be at the darts. It really is. Any other sporting event, totally acceptable with no alcohol in you, but not the case with the darts, I think, is
cricket.
Is my conclusion.
He's sober at cricket. Well, you can.
Not many people are.
There's plenty of people sober. There's a few.
Steve, we have a women's Six Nations squad announcement.
Yes, the Ireland head coach, Scott Beamond, has named 9 uncapped players in his squad of 36 ahead of the Six Nations campaign, which gets underway next month. Hooker Beth Buttermer is among those after she was in the World Cup squad last year. Jemima Adams-Verling Elish Cahill, Evian McGrath and Sophie Barish are the other uncapped forwards. Uncapped backs, Alana McInerney, Katrina Finn, Niamh Gallagher and Robin O'Connor also included. Dorothy Wall, of course, missed the World Cup with that Achilles injury. She's back in the fold. Ireland opened their campaign away to England at Twickenham on Saturday, April 11th. Then they take on Italy at the Dexcom Stadium. Then it's against France in Clermont on Saturday, April 25th, with back-to-back home games then in Belfast and Dublin. Wales are the visitors on Saturday, May 9th, and then it's Scotland at the Aviva on Sunday, May 17th, to close it out.
And then a couple of pieces of news with regards to men's rugby. First of all, Rob Ballacoon, really unfortunate look for him.
Yeah, it's really disappointing, as the Enniskillen man who picked up the Six Nations Rising Star Award with three tries in the tournament just passed suffered an elbow injury while on Ireland duty. He's now set to undergo surgery, which could see him sidelined for up to 3 months. Ulster, of course, in URC Interpro action in Belfast tomorrow night against Connacht. And the Six Nations team of the championship was named. Four Irish players included: Ireland captain Caelan Doris and Jack Conan in the back row, Tadhg Burns in the second row, and then Stuart McCloskey completes the quartet in the centre.
Rob Ballacoon should be in that team, and also terrible news for him on the injury front, so it's been a desperate day for him. Not that he'll care too much about the Six Nations team of the championship. Did we get it spot on with your prediction last week in terms of Scotland? I think you were close enough.
I can't remember what I said, except that Ireland were going to win. I said Ireland were going to win, didn't I?
Yes, but I think you said narrowly, maybe. As
narrowly, opposed to, Well, no, yeah, let's not forget about it. I said Ireland were going to win.
Yeah, you got it.
So I'm 100% record,
I mean,
in predictions. The gaslighting on the France prediction.
The Oracle is undefeated, except for the France victory. Just on the Ballacoon thing, like, I mean, he is going to be back by the middle of June and hopefully does play for Ireland come July against Australia and against New Zealand in particular. But God, if you're Ulster, you're riding this wave over the last month or so, you're thinking to yourself, geez, finally some recognition for the Ulster players. The fine form at certain stages of the URC this season has led to a lot of those players being selected for Ireland. And then in literally the last half of the tournament, one of our best players gets injured and we're no longer going to have him for the rest of the season. It's a real sour note, actually, for Ulster after they've had a great Six Nations.
Oh, 100%. Listen, these things happen. Ballacoon, brilliant player, great potential over the next few years. And they do still have some other, like Tom O'Toole, I know, is on the bench for the game against Connacht tomorrow. I'm sure he'll be chomping at the bit to go out there and put on a good performance. And McCloskey, that guy's almost, he's been brilliant. 33 years of age and he still looks like he's got a lot of miles in the clock.
I've got a text in here from a listener who shall remain nameless. He said, win by 7.
Oh, did I? Okay, Jesus.
People listen to what you said, Dion, and they remembered.
Yeah. And what was the winning margin in the end?
22, was it?
Yeah, okay. All right.
It's 15 off.
15, yeah.
You can't gaslight us.
No.
People have receipts.
Yeah, okay. But like I said, they'd win. Lots of people. The point is that people were nervous. People were anxious. People were worried that Scotland were going to win. And I came in and I said, don't worry. Everything is going to be all right.
And it permeated the camp.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I just sprinkled a little bit of reassurance for the nation.
Well, thank you for your service, Dion.
Thank you.
There'll be more from Dion Fanning from 9 o'clock on the football show this evening. Ben, thanks for popping in. You can check out Ben's full piece with Hamer Halgrimson on the Off the Ball social channel. Stephen Doyle, thank you for tonight's news round. We'll be speaking to Dave Hannigan about his new book, We Need to Talk About Roy, The Keenification of Modern Ireland. After the break, we'll be talking Venezuelan baseball as well before 9 o'clock. So loads still to come. We'll take a quick break.